You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
So excited. I don't even know what to do. I'm like ready to call, come to your guys' houses right when the episode's finished at this point and go, what do you have to say about that? We're on episodes 14 and 15 of our Twin Peaks critical analysis, I guess is the studious sounding way.
Yeah.
Support walk through. Really. Yeah, it's a Twin Peaks Watchers Anonymous. And so much stuff has happened in the last two episodes. It's like six episodes of previous things of content.
I remember the last time we recorded, I think we ended it, and I was like a little down. I was like, you know, I don't know if this is all going to come together. Like, nothing's really been happening in the last couple of episodes. And then sure enough,
in
like
the first 10 minutes, it all comes together.
First 10 minutes, it's like somebody just like put their foot right to the pedal of the metal and just like
Lynch, like
boom, boom, boom.
Lift up the little cap on the gear shift and press the red button, and the nitrous kicked in, and he was just.
I wonder, does he, you know, I knew he edited episode 8 like right before it aired, and I'm wondering, is he like putting them together like week by week, seeing how people react, going, I know what I'm going to do, switch.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I feel like he is, like he's like live mixing it almost.
I mean, I want to bug Christian Calloway, the actor who did the interview with us, who chats with me every once in a while online, because he had another appearance in here, and he's already told me, I'm happy to talk with you anytime, but I can't say anything about, I was given a stern finger wagging, which means somebody at Twin Peaks knows we exist, and said not to say anything else until the show's over.
Yes,
he's like, okay, but we'll get more out of him when this is all done with. Well, as usual, we're going to start with episode 14 and do our best to not go too far ahead until we officially clip over to episode 15, but there's only so much you can do about it. Let's be fair. And as usual, we're going to start by reading the bizarrely written Wikipedia synopsis of the episodes. Scott, this has now become your job.
Apparently.
So go ahead and read it out.
Frank informs Gordon that pages found from Laura's diary suggest two Coopers. Albert tells Tammy about the first Blue Rose case, which involved doppelgangers. Diane identifies Janie E. as her estranged half-sister. Gordon orders the Las Vegas office to search for the Joneses. Chad is arrested.
Yay!
Frank, Hawk, Bobby, and Andy follow Briggs' instructions and find Nato naked in the wood. No, that happens. Whatever. It was at first. Anyway, Andy is transported to the firemen. Fair. And who shows him visions of the events in New Mexico, Laura, two Coopers, Lucy, and an electrical pole numbered nine.
Six.
Wow.
You have some weird version of dyslexia I've never seen.
Look, I've been driving for like 2 weeks. I am goddamn exhausted.
You're in the upside down.
I am. The world went insane while I was gone, so, you know.
This is true.
Andy carries Nio to the sheriff's department. She's put in a cell next to Chad and an injured drunk. James learns from the Great Northern security guard, Freddie Sykes, that he bought a strength-enhancing glove and moved to Twin Peaks from London after a vision of the fireman. Yeah. James notices a hum in the boiler room. Okay. When a trucker insults her in a bar, Sarah opens her face, feeling darkness, and bites his throat, killing him. At the roadhouse, Megan and Sophie discuss Billy, who stormed into Megan's kitchen, bleeding from his nose and mouth.
When I was writing this, or putting this on here, I was like, can you imagine someone who didn't even know what Twin Peaks was, really, just that it was a TV show, and they stumble across this episode description and go, what the fuck is this?
I was FaceTiming with my parents the day after this episode aired. My mom watched the show, so we're talking, we're, you know, like theorizing and all that. And my dad's sitting there, who's never watched an episode of this in his life. And at a certain point, he just kind of turns and he's like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
And you just both give him a blank cold. So right off the bat, and I had noticed this as well, but people were starting to comment on it, that the production logo for Rancho Rosso at the beginning of each episode has been changing colors.
Yeah.
This week it was black and white, which seemed appropriate. Very funny, Gordon on the phone with Lucy, going, Jesus Christ, you're still there? And of course she says, no, I'm not here all the time. I've been home in Bora Bora. kind of want to see a whole spinoff just about Andy and Lucy's Bora Bora trip.
Right. Like, maybe it was during Y2K, so, you know, some of that paranoia there. It'd be great. God,
yes. But, of course, there's a bit of silliness there. We get to see move on to Albert telling Tammy about more details about the Blue Rose Task Force. Now, this is where we start going, whoa, this is like, I feel like I should be writing this down as it's going. Basically, they say there's a woman named Lois Duffy who was a suspect in a murder in Olympia, Washington. Cole and Jeffries, who were the founding members of the Blue Rose Task Force, were investigating this Lois Duffy as a suspect. They heard a gunshot outside a room. They busted in. Lois is on the floor, wounded from a gunshot, dying. She says, "I'm like the Blue Rose." She smiles, dies, and disappears, as you do. Meanwhile, they see the woman who shot her standing up, and she's also Lois Duffy. Albert adds, by the way, Lois Duffy did not have a twin sister. In jail, the other Lois killed herself. She hung herself. And Albert asks Tammy, so what do you think about all that? What do you think that means? And she basically says she thinks that means the Blue Rose doesn't occur in nature, so the dying woman was not natural, that somehow she was conjured, or the first real mentioning of this term, a tulpa. I mean, other than on My Little Pony, because, you know, this guy's... But no, see, that's a big thing for My Little Pony people, apparently, are tulpas.
Somewhere Joseph Compton just got his wings.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, they call themselves tulpamancers, people who create tulpas on purpose.
Learning something new every day. Like yeah,
that's a real thing.
The deep rooted mythology that surrounds My Little Pony.
I think the bathroom door is open. One of the cats is pushing it open.
This haunted house sound.
Yeah, I mean, a tulpa is a thing. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it goes way back in Buddhist mythology, I believe. Yeah. But like just recently, it's become kind of like, you know, cool occultism, cute occultism, if you will, du jour. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, I have created several tulpas. You know, a bit Harvey the Rabbit from the classic movie Harvey is considered to be a tulpa, you know, a conjured up form. So now they've sort of incorporated this idea into the show, which right off the bat, of course, explains a lot and asks the question. So then Dougie is probably a tulpa for Mr. C.
Mm-hmm.
Scott is like,
this is going to jump ahead to another episode. I have thoughts about Mr. C and Dougie now, and I'm very confused about it all. Deeply confused.
You're deeply worried.
I don't think it's as simple as Dougie is Cooper and Mr. C is the evil doppelganger anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not sure. Because Mr. C is acting more like Cooper more and more. Yeah, and his, jumping to the 15 for a second, I apologize, him saying to the teapot kettle, Jeffries, whatever the fuck that was, that he knew about the whole time he encountered him in 1989. How the hell would he know that if he wasn't Cooper?
We'll get to that.
I know. I'm just
time jumping, just like the show.
But this asks a lot of tulpa questions. Like, first up, who else could be a tulpa? An obvious choice, of course, is Maddie from the original second season. Yeah. Laura's cousin, who was played by the same actress, who comes out of nowhere, and with Sarah Palmer, Grace Zabriskie's connection to having some degree of like supernatural abilities herself, asks the question: is she a tulpa that she created in this situation?
Yeah,
interesting. Wanting Laura back.
Yeah, nice. And Sarah Palmer herself, like, is it possible that we're not just seeing Sarah? Sometimes maybe we're seeing a double of herself sometimes. That's a tulpa.
She's become mother.
Yeah, especially with the attack on Mr. Truck U.
That was pretty awesome.
And Laura Palmer herself, when the fireman in episode 8 floats up in the air and the essence comes out of him, out of his head, and it becomes a glowing orb with Laura's face on it being sent to Earth, sort of indicates on some level Lara herself is a created life form for a specific purpose.
And again, it kind of goes back to this thing we keep being told every single episode. You know, Laura's the one. This is all going back to Laura. Every episode of the show begins with an image of Laura superimposed over the woods.
Yes.
You know, and so we keep episode by episode, they keep reminding us, hey, she's really important. Mm-hmm. This is all going back to her somehow.
Right.
And even the way that Sarah Palmer took her face off, Yeah, as she did. Well, like one does. Yeah.
It's just like when Laura took her pants off.
Except instead of there being like this emanating light and electricity, it was the deleted scenes from Eraserhead.
Yeah.
However,
there was another very direct connection I picked up from super deep cut fandom, which is the smile she has.
Yeah.
Somebody matched it exactly with Laura Palmer's
smile.
You sent
me that.
From that
what
photograph.
The hell?
It was like exactly the smile.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Huh. Of course, the drunk in the jail cell, pretty much everybody's like, okay, that's got to be the mythical Billy,
yeah.
right?
Or
that everyone keeps responding. He's sitting there, he's bleeding out of the mouth and nose, as was reported in the Billy story. But he's also got that sort of Dougie behavior, like that not quite there, repeating things that everybody else says. It definitely, there feels
Something's like a
comparison. So is that possible he's a Billy himself is a tulpa? Or maybe, you know, there's another one somewhere. Nado, played by Nayuki here, the fact that she seems unfinished.
Yeah.
Or something seems like maybe on some level she's one, although the prevailing theory seems to be she is Judy. She is the sister of
Josie
Packard.
Yeah.
But that's only if they stick to notes and literally just notes, nothing that ever happened on screen that was reported by the Wrapped in Plastic magazine, the official Twin Peaks fanzine way back when, that was originally the plan. She would be that. But they honestly, that could have changed drastically.
Well, I love how like it feels like part of the season is, and I'm not saying this is like a negative, but it feels like a large part of the season is David Lynch going like, no, Fire Walk With Me matters, damn it.
Yeah,
it does. You will not rub, you will not brush us under the carpet.
Like the entire season is like, it's so.
Yeah. And especially, especially with the episode before, or was it this episode with Monica Bellucci? Or that was 13.
That's this episode.
That was this episode. So like with this in 14 when we get the whole the dream and who is the dreamer and all that.
Yes.
Going back to the showing the scene from Fire Walk With Me again, to then jumping ahead a little bit to 15, them talking about Judy. It's like, every little thing that they, that was kind of like, people kind of were like, whatever, it's Fire Walk With Me. It's Mark Frost wasn't on this one. This is Lynch going off and doing his own weird thing.
Right.
All of that, they're, trying desperately to like bring that in and weave this into this whole weird endgame.
I mean, he's doing
towards.
A lot more of trying to tie up threads than I ever would have thought he would have been interested in doing. So.
Which makes me interested to see the next three episodes, because if they continue at this pace... maybe we're going to get a less ambiguous finale than I thought we were.
Yeah. Somebody's going to go to J.J. Abrams and say, see?
Yeah.
See how you do it? So we saw Diane get called in to talk to Albert and Cole. And he says, she says that Mr. C had mentioned Major Briggs that night long ago when he showed up after Dale presumably disappeared, transformed so long ago. Albert chooses to tell Diane about the ring they found inside of Major Briggs' body. It says, to Dougie with love, Jenny E., which is one of the big dun-dun-dun moments where we're like, why didn't I think of that? That she says, oh, I've got this half-sister named Jane who everybody calls Janie E. Diane's last name is Evans, so Janie E. Who's married to a guy named Douglas Jones, who everybody calls Dougie. So it's and this is how they finally go, maybe we should go to Vegas. Finally.
For weeks, everybody's been like, who names someone Janie E. unironically? Like, why is she called Janie? That's never mind.
Yeah.
All right.
It's so, cute, but
that weird little moment that shows when he calls up the branch director in Vegas. Played by the guy who played Stan from Mad Men, who's like, Wilson, how many times have I told you? This is what we do in the FBI.
That was awesome.
And he gets
there's only 23. Or there's 23 of them.
And he gets his moment in 15, too. We'll get to that.
Weirdness. Of course, another one of the big moments here is Monica Bellucci. God, I really love Monica Bellucci, so I was so happy to see her brought into this, where Cole says, oh, I just had this dream, which only in Twin Peaks would other FBI agents go, fascinating, let me take notes. This is going to be important. Which, of course, is all in black and white, where he's in the dream, he's on assignment in Paris. Monica calls him, as you do, hey, Cole, what are you doing? Let's go out for coffee. They sit, and Monica says a couple things that obviously feel like, oh, what does that really mean? We're like the dreamer who dreams and then lives inside the dream. But who is the dreamer? And interestingly, and there's a little bit of a deep cut I didn't even like catch initially when I was writing my notes for this. She indicates he should turn around, and he sees his younger self and the scene from Fire Walk with Me where Jeffries comes from the office. All right, a couple different interesting things about this. One, if you were actually in that place in Paris and you look where he looks, it's the art gallery where he did a major exhibition of his works. Which apparently he's hinted that the work in that exhibition ties into Twin Peaks mythology.
The face.
The very Magritte-inspired stuff.
Yeah, it's cool.
Also, interesting note, the big line that everyone's... We've talked about several times already from that scene with Fire Walk With Me where Jeffries comes into the office, points at Dale Cooper, and says, "Who do you think this is there?" Well... In fact, apparently in the original version of the scene, David Bowie actually says, originally, who do you think that is there? Now, the actor who was called in to voice this character for, obviously, who appears in voice only and as a giant teapot in this episode, Nathan Frizzell, somebody asked him and said, "So what was the deal with changing that line? Why would you go in and redub that line?" And he said, "There is a logic behind it, but that is a question for the master himself."
This whole scene, as crazy as it was, felt so vindicating for me, because I think on that last one I pointed out where I'm like, for years I've always thought, what, there's got to be something to that line, or he points at Cooper.
Right.
And the fact that actually becomes a major plot point in this episode, I literally stood up and went, yes! Yes! I'm not wrong!
I think we all did to some degree. Well, and then just finding that out, that they actually redubbed it, and it means something, I was like... You're killing me, David Lynch.
Well, and then like with Monica Bellucci, you know, her name had been on the cast list, you know, and the whole season, you know, she was like one of the last big names that hadn't shown up, and we were like, well, who's Monica Bellucci going to play? Of course, you know, she shows up as herself, like you do. But I know, like right before they finished filming, they spotted Lynch and Kyle MacLachlan like in Paris shooting stuff, and so that was like a huge question, like what were they doing in Paris and all that. Now we have that answer, Yeah, there is, like, just, if nothing else happened in this episode at all, just this one scene, there's so much to unpack.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know? And we're going to continue here unpacking that particular scene because there's so much to say.
Yeah.
This came from Entertainment Weekly, this specific thing. 10 years ago, David Lynch introduced at least one screening of Inland Empire, the last theatrical film he made, with pretty much that exact phrase, claiming it was from the Upanishads, text that provided the basis for Hinduism. And the full quote was, "We are like the spider. We weave our life and then move along in it. We are like the dreamer who dreams and then lives in the dream. This is true for the entire universe." He read it out loud while Chris Isaak, who played Chet Desmond in Twin Peaks Firewalk With Me, played background music. But apparently that's either a very loose translation or a purposeful misquote. The actual quote is, "As the spider creates the cobweb out of its saliva, it lives and plays in it, and at the end, the same spider swallows up the cobweb. Similarly, the god, the Lord, creates the whole universe as the act of his thought. He manifests in it, and again, he withdraws the whole universe in himself." Which is, you know, interesting. It definitely makes me think of things like the fireman as God, so to speak. You know, his house being that the movie theater. I don't know. Lots of great pseudo... philosophical meanderings, but and then Albert going, "Oh yeah, that did happen," and you're like, "What?
How did he tap into it?" I love that
very bizarre sequence that it was actually one of the only scenes I went back and rewatched like right after it stopped. Just like, wait, rewind that. I got to see that again. So then another long-awaited moment, as finally the time comes on the hidden slip of paper that Briggs left to make it to Jackrabbit's palace up in the mountain for Sheriff Truman, Andy, Hawk, and Bobby. That weird moment, Andy's like, "Oh yeah, don't forget, we're supposed to all put dirt in our pockets." He's like, "Wait, what?" Turns out it was a good idea, at least presumably. They walk the 253 yards exactly due east, and we see the woman Nada, who we saw in episode 8 with Cooper in the purple room.
Episode 3.
Oh, it was episode 3. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. The woman with the no eyes and who seemingly sacrificed herself in a method that really reminds me of what happens in episode 15 when Mr. C goes into the gas station and one of the woodsmen pulls a lever and sparks fly out. Very similar thing with her pulling a lever and sparks fly and then she goes flying off. But this is the same woman here. We see a pit of oil, like we saw much earlier in the season in Glastonbury Grove, which seems to indicate a doorway between worlds. And if that didn't make it sure enough that that's what's going on, we actually see another, black hole sun up in the sky, like Cole saw in South Dakota. And Andy is the one who would be the last person of this group I would have imagined would have been the one to be picked to go to the White Lodge. Although I keep wanting to call it the Gray Lodge.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of more of a Gray Lodge. Yeah.
Yeah.
To talk to the fireman, who we now know is called the fireman. He introduces himself as that. We used to just call him the giant.
Yeah.
Who gives him, basically just gives him, like, previously on Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
From the little video that he shows him in the light up above him about 4:30. And Richard and what we saw originally, the giant in the same room, he gave Cooper the message about 4:30. Richard and Linda, two birds with one stone, and it is in our house now. I don't believe we still really have totally unpacked all of that yet either.
Linda's still the mystery.
Yeah. And then Andy is suddenly holding something that looks like the top half of a pine cone, maybe. Like a sculpted pine cone.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, I saw this. Somebody was going through this episode, and apparently that item that he's holding is like a really deep cut back to like Lynch's early paintings he did back in the 70s.
Huh.
That was like a design that he put in a couple of his paintings.
Nice.
And so I don't know if it means
anything.
You think
David Lynch's whole life is part of what we... Yeah.
That's
not enough for you to read the secret history of Twin Peaks. You've got to actually read his biography.
Well, that's the thing. It's like it's more and more as people are kind of digging into each episode. It really does. Like we were joking about it, you know, at the start. But it really does seem like this entire season is like one giant manifesto for his entire career. Just like, all right, it's all going into this because I don't know if I'm ever going to get a chance to do something like this ever again.
He's getting old.
And you noticed that Andy was the only one who ordered only cheese?
Yeah.
I think
he's a simple guy.
He's simple and sweet and something, maybe he's a vegetarian, kind of rabbit energy. Is it about the bunnies? I mean, he's got bunnies. Him and Lucy have like bunny energy. They're very innocent people.
Maybe it's like why he's chosen because he's not going to. He just takes it for exactly what it is.
Yeah, he might be fool, but he's pure-hearted.
He got the message.
Well, I think it goes back to later in this episode when they're talking to One Punch Man. And he talks about how, like, he was having a conversation with the fireman. Freddie, thank you. And he's talking to, when he was talking to the fireman, and he asked the fireman, why me? And the fireman said, well, why not?
Yeah.
You know, that it's kind of, you're getting this theme that it's like the most, essentially the most innocent people are the ones who are being chosen.
Or the John the Baptists.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of isn't that the King Arthurian thing? Like the person that doesn't want to be the king that can pull the sword, like a pure heart.
I wish we would do that in America for our president.
Oh, yes.
It's like, who if they
the
pick the guy
doesn't
who doesn't want
to lead is the leader, you know?
But the stuff he gets shown, Andy gets shown, like I said previously on Twin Peaks, as you see the experiment, from the stuff from episode 8 where Bob is unleashed. Initially, you see the woodsman around the convenience store, the God of Light woodsman, the girl running through the courtyard of Twin Peaks High School from the original pilot, which recurred in the opening credits of part one of The Return. You see Laura Palmer, the same photo we see every week, and then surrounded by the angels, and then you see the two Coopers. He saw a phone ring, he saw himself, and he saw Lucy with him guiding her into a room, and then he saw, of course, that goddamn telephone pole that torments poor Carl with the big six on it that presumably means something.
It's like a freeway for hell. I mean, it snitches people and has it dropped anyone off?
Scott, it's a nine.
And it is.
It could have fallen, it just fell upside down.
It's true.
One of the things
very
fell
true.
Off. Just saying.
Interesting.
And then, of course, the ghostly time skipping as he returns, which, like, him returning says to me, that's why the soil in their pockets.
Yeah.
Because they needed something to pull them back to this reality, that to be grounded like that. Why their clothes alone wouldn't be enough, I don't know. But anyway, Andy appears with Nato in his arms. He's just such a hero now. I love Andy. Saying, we need to get her down the mountain. She's very important, and there are people who want her dead. So, of course, for some reason, he puts her in a prison cell, which I thought was odd.
Right
next to Chad, who, is now arrested and being bitter and noisy. He basically acts like a douche to Andy.
So satisfying.
That's what happens when you read.
And then, of course, the drunk who keeps echoing everybody, like Dougie. And the real question is, like I said, is this, in fact, Billy? At the end of episode 7, a guy named Bing, who was played by David Lynch's son Riley, comes into the Double R looking for Billy. In episode 12, Audrey, of course, is in hysteric about Billy, who she identifies as her lover, his whereabouts, and wants her husband, Charlie, to help search for him. And now in episode 14, we find out that Tina also had something going on with Billy. Megan, Shane Lynch, recounts the last time she saw him, which was apparently the last time anyone saw him, saying that he showed up at the house where she was with her mom and possibly her uncle. She's not sure. He was bleeding heavily from the mouth and nose and had a crazy look in his eyes. He hopped a 6-foot fence to get to the house and came in and hung his head in the kitchen sink before bolting out again.
I'm going to disagree. Oh, Tina also had something going on with Billy? No. Audrey has nothing going on with Billy. Audrey's either she's insane or she's in some sort of weird loop, because they clearly say, who's your mom? Oh, yeah, not Audrey. Like, it's very, like, distinctly not Audrey. So I don't think there's anything going on with Audrey and Billy. I think that's in her head or something.
Maybe.
Well, but she said it. But regardless Tina's of whether or not mom. It is what it is, she said it.
Audrey thinks she does. Yeah.
Right, but I don't think Audrey... We don't know what's going on
and then
at
the
all.
And girl...
I still suspect, especially with the whole, like... Something in her is keep it. Charlie's like, all right, fine, let's go. Let's go. And then she can't bring herself to go.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that there's when we finally see what's on the other side of that front door, it ain't like a walkway.
Beetlejuice snake.
Yeah, exactly. The Beetlejuice snake. That would be awesome.
Spice or something.
Is there your Dune crossover? Yes. Bring it all full circle.
So officially, finally, James does something in this season that we're like, oh, that was pretty cool, which is not even James himself, but befriending Freddy, who is basically a superhero that the fireman has assigned the task first of telling him how to get a glove back in London that will give him super strength powers.
Does that remind you of Uncle Dell in Wild at Heart? He had those gloves in a stick. Oh my God, I love that stick.
And then he was told, he said he was sucked up into a vortex into the air and talked to the fireman.
And then he said,
now after you get the thing, go to Twin Peaks and you find your destiny. And as you already said, why me? Why not you?
Yeah.
Which is unusually pithy for the fireman. He's like, believe the grapefruit or something like that. And then you're like, well, I guess we should do our job now instead of sitting here fucking around. So James goes in to where they're working as security guards underneath the Great Northern, and he checks the furnace, and he hears that same sound Ben Horn was hearing in his office, and which is interesting. And there's also a weird door in the corner. It's like, I wonder what that is.
It sounds like a Tibetan singing bowl.
You know, yeah. That's probably where Audrey is.
Oh,
that would be
gosh.
Something.
Wow.
Well, and just a fun bit of trivia. That whole
I hadn't thought about that.
That's super great.
That whole furnace area they're in reminded me a lot of in the European pilot when they did the weird closed ending where they go underneath the hospital and they find Bob with his like circle of candles and everything and he gets shot. I was waiting. I'm like, is he gonna turn a corner and are they gonna like incorporate this footage somehow?
Oh my God.
Yeah, the weird, like, it's a one and done.
We're like, all right, well, there you go. Mystery solved. All right.
Bob was the killer. And he's your uncle. Sorry.
Are you thinking that Audrey's, like, trapped? What is that Edgar Allan Poe where it's a Monte Cristo? Someone gets trapped in a wall.
The Casca Amontillado?
Yeah, it's like some creepy, like, she's dead trapped in there.
It's like Audrey is
something because... Because they don't ever leave. They're stuck in this room. They don't ever do anything else. And she's, like, trapped in this, like, repeating loop in hell. And the humming is her trying to get out, kind of like Josie. Because maybe...
Creepy.
We all think, oh, Ben's changed. He's magnanimous now. He's so nice. Maybe not so much.
Yeah, like, what if he's the one who trapped Audrey in the basement?
Right.
Assuming that's the case, once again. But that is a very interesting point. They call special attention to that door. You know, it felt MacGuffin-ish almost, the amount.
And it just cuts. And it's never mentioned again.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, and if for no other reason than the fact that there are 3 episodes left. We have got... Like, I'm assuming... You know, like, because no one's mentioned Audrey, you know, that either in a scene with Richard Horn or something, we're going to figure out what the fuck is going on with Audrey right now.
Well, because in 15 they talk, 14 or 15?
Which one?
With Richard, where he's acknowledged as who.
He says he mentions his mom, but no one talks about her like in the present tense.
No,
You know, no one says what is she doing right now.
Exactly.
It's a type of thing. The way he delivered
she's hanging out behind the door.
She's in hell.
Oh my God!
Don't toy with my emotions like that.
Speaking of in hell, Sarah Palmer, or maybe her tulpa, as we pointed out, we said can take her face off. We already talked about this a good deal, just like Laura did in the Black Lodge in Part 2. And then eats that dude's neck off, who so totally awesome. Has it coming, for, yeah. even though she's clearly not good. She's obviously a little on the dark side. you still kind of go, good call. Mr. Chuck, you had a comment. Yeah,
she's getting revenge.
I just really love Grace Zabriskie's delivery. Like right after she, you know, snaps out of it and screams and everything, when she's talking to the bartender and she's like, "Yeah, that was kind of weird, huh?" It just kind of gives him that look.
Yeah, she goes, "Yep, it's a mystery."
He very slowly backs away from her.
She's always been not evil, but
she does that.
In the finale of the original series, she gets a message from someone.
Wyndham Earle.
Yeah.
She's in the Black Lodge of Cooper, and I'm like, maybe she's been touched for God knows how long.
When we start talking about the convenience store in 15, there's actually some interesting things that point out maybe a connection between the woodsman and her. But anyway, to finish this episode out, of course, it ends in the roadhouse with more characters we don't know talking about stuff we don't know what they're talking about.
Sure.
Which is really normal now at this point. The one woman admits to being a thief who stole her sweater from her friend Paula. She mentions Billy and the whole stuff we talked about before, which indeed is stuff that Audrey mentioned she dreamed about.
Right.
Her mom and Billy apparently had a thing, and her mom's name is Tina. Right when she says that, there's a weird deep rumble in the soundtrack. It's like, huh. Yeah. Well,
who the fuck is Tina?
That's more important than Billy now.
Yeah.
She says, "Me and my mom. I don't remember if my uncle was there."
Oh.
Meanwhile, just curiosity, the other woman she's talking to is Emily Stoffel, who's David Lynch's wife, who we met during the filming of Inland Empire. Cool. He's just packing it. It's one of those things, you call in everybody you know and you're related to when you got a project.
Could Tina be a tupla? Is it tupla for Audrey?
Tulpa.
Tulpa. Yeah. There we go. Tupla. I don't know. I'm making up new words.
That's possible.
This is weird.
At this point, I feel like the whole Billy thing, I'm not convinced it's going to go anywhere.
No, it's just kind of a red herring. It's like,
yeah.
Maybe he's the guy in the jail cell.
I think he is the guy.
He probably is.
Like, but we didn't talk about that horrible scene where they just screech for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But
the
I don't.
Window
ears. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I don't think it's going to be a storyline that, like, amounts to anything in the way that everything else is.
Right.
Now, watch me be wrong. This week, it turns out, you know, Billy was the key to everything.
Billy is actually Bob.
Yeah.
Billy Bob.
Everything
Billy
perfectly Bob connects, Lord, and we're suddenly like, oh, my God, drop the coffee cup.
It turned out like Lynch knew he was going to do this for a lot longer than we thought, and the actor playing Bob fake his own death so he could come up as a huge surprise in the final episode.
Honestly, at this point.
Although I'd be much happier if it turned out David Bowie faked his own death, because then we'd have David Bowie.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That seems would be
unlikely.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'd be all for it.
Seems that would unlikely. Be pretty cool.
or he just, people. They found a way to save him, but only by changing him into a giant teapot. all right, so we're on to episode 15. Scott, take it away with the Wikipedia synopsis.
Wow, this is a crazy synopsis, too. Cooper's doppelganger arrives at the convenience store to ask Jeffries, who appears as a metal casing, or teapot, I still say teapot,
teapot.
Kind of teapot,
about the assassination attempt and someone called Judy. Jeffrey tells him he's already met Judy and gives him numbers. Outside, Richard attacks the doppelganger, who he recognized as FBI agent his mother Audrey knew, but is subdued. In Las Vegas, Chantal assassinates Duncan, Todd, and Roger. Cooper reacts to hearing Gord's name on TV and sticks a fork into an electrical socket. Hooray. Inspired by Dr. Jacoby's show, Nadine tells Ed he is free to pursue Norma. Norma lets Walter buy out the RR franchise and then accepts Ed's marriage proposal. Gerson attempts to console an armed, suicidal Stephen in the woods. Hiding from a passerby, she hears a gunshot. The long laddie calls Hawk and gives him some final advice before dying. R.I.P. Audrey and Charlie continue to argue. At the Roadhouse, James is attacked by Renee's jealous husband, Chuck, whom Freddie hospitalizes with his glove.
Super Freddie.
Freddie and James are arrested, and young woman crawls across the Roadhouse floor and screams.
Oh, my God.
So if the last episode was them, like, hitting the accelerator, this one is, like, them suddenly going, all right, we got to wrap all this stuff up.
Yeah.
It's, like, three or four different storylines just in this episode get, I'm assuming, tied off for good.
Yeah, they're, like, pulling out parts of the very confusing stuff from season 8 and flat out saying, well, here's what that is.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Isn't it Letting Go is Hard to Do? But, is that the title?
They never give him an official title.
I think that's like the line that they had on the site. Yeah.
But it starts off so schmaltzy, though, which is hysterical with, like, you know, a very famous love song playing very loudly. And after Norma comes up and tells I'm sorry. After awesome. I'm sorry. What's her name? Not Norma. Nadine comes up and goes, "Ed, you're free. Yeah. Do what you want. I'm gonna go fuck. I'm not gonna tell you this, but I'm gonna go fuck Dr. Jacobi."
I was saying before, and I have to say it here. Yeah. Nadine walking with a shovel, like she's gonna beat the shit out of Ed. She's gonna kill Ed right now. Holy shit!
I didn't pick it up. I was thinking somehow the shovel. That's her connection to Dr. Jacobi. That's her soulmate.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's going to happen. She's going to go off with Jacobi, and finally, Big Ed and Norma, finally, we're going to get that ending.
And even then, he can't give it to you straight up, because Ed comes in and is like, I'm so ready, and she's like, yeah, that's nice, and walks away, and he's like, fuck, like, breaks his heart right there, but only because she's like, she could have said, seriously, just give me one
minute. Hold my beer. Yeah. I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah.
It goes and tells Walter, I'm done with doing business with you. I just want to be in Twin Peaks with my family and friends. Then goes back, accepts Ed's marriage proposal, and the word they could have actually written is a subscript fan service.
Yeah.
But in the best way possible. Because, like, you know, honestly, part of me kind of hopes that we don't see Norma and Ed after this.
Why would we need to?
You know, that this is the button on
or even Nadine and Dr. Jacobi. They really aren't tied into anything
else. And, yeah, it's fan service, but damn it, it was earned. Like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I got pretty choked up watching that scene. I really did.
That song, too. I was like, and I also, oh, ready.
It was emotional, but also, I cried, I'm not going to lie.
It's soap opera-y.
But it was also very much like Lynch and I, you were talking about, like, whether it be a second season or whatever this, I feel like it is very self-contained. Mm-hmm. And the whole plot line with Norma and the franchising of the RR Diner felt so much about, like, we're not gonna keep making Twin Peaks. I'm just going to do what I want to do the way I want to do it. And this is him saying, you know what?
Yeah.
Screw you. I'm not going to franchise it. I'm done. And I'm gonna take my store back. You buy my shares. I'm out.
I mean, or it could alternately just be, this way you guys are happy with, we got conclusions for these characters that were created, but I got nothing else for them to do, so let's just wrap them up and we'll move on to other stuff. I mean, my God, he's created so many new characters with this season.
Yeah, this is true.
You know? But then, of course, immediately after that sunny scene, it goes right to hell.
like a good episode of Twin Peaks does.
Mr. C drives down the Lost Highway.
Yeah. Kind of looks like that. Right. It felt like, I was like, here we are again. Here we go.
Arriving at the convenience store from Part 8, the Magical Woodsman Convenience Fish. Called an inconvenience store. They don't sell shit.
Yeah. They have corn.
Nothing but cream corn.
Oil spilled around.
We assume he's on his way to Twin Peaks because he got the coordinates that were Twin Peaks. So one would also presume now he is, in fact, in the Pacific Northwest. And since it seems kind of ghostly, we see it disappear at the end. And, in fact, because before we knew it was in New Mexico, we assume that this location roams, that it's capable of moving around from place to place. Weird that he knew that's exactly where to meet up with it, but, you know, he's Mr. C. You know? Mr. C! also strange that the woodsmen who meet him are just kind of like, what's up? when he's like, but last time we saw them with him, they were like forcibly yanking what looked like they were forcibly yanking Bob out of him. But maybe we just misread that whole sequence.
Or maybe they recognize him as one of their own.
Yeah.
Essentially. If they're Black Lodge inhabitants, they're like, oh yeah, we saw you wandering around the hallways.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Familiar, and they're
we went to
surprised.
High school together.
You dated my sister.
But not surprised.
Of course, Mr. C is there to see Agent Jeffries, who now has, as we pointed out, turned into a giant, like, teapot.
That, like you do.
Yeah. That looks a lot like both the sort of contraption at the top of the tower with Nada inside of the, on top of the purple room, and it also looks like the weird alarm bell, diving bell thing inside of the Gray Lodge / White Lodge. It looks a lot like it. But anyway, so Mr. G's there because he's like, hey, Jeffries, I heard you wanted to kill me. What is going on with that? And also, this whole Judy thing, kind of confused, need to know what's happening there. Of course, Ray, who is the one who told him where to find Jeffries, said he could be found in a place that technically wasn't real called the Dutchman's. So I guess that's what we're going to call the convenience store from now on, is the Dutchman's. Now, here we get some deep cut weirdness here with
what's going on?
All right,
there?
So he gets let in. A woodsman throws a lever, and sparks fill the room. And Mr. C sees in a minute a flickering vision that shows that masked, red suited Black Lodge demon that fans call the Jumping Man. That in fact we've seen versions of him throughout the show, even going back. We'll get more to that in a minute. There's so much to unpack in this whole sequence. This is the Monica Bellucci dream of this episode. But fans who froze the image, and believe me, this isn't one of those, oh, it kind of looks like it. There's fucking no doubt Sarah Palmer's face is superimposed over the Jumping Man's face. Where you're like, yeah, that's definitely no question. Although some people have pointed out that it also looks like they kind of superimposed Agent Jeffrey's face over hers even as well. Like, it's kind of half and half, which would actually make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because even in Fire Walk With Me, when that scene when Bowie shows up, for a second we see the Jumping Man there. And also the fact that he's there to see Jeffrey's altogether. So
it's kind of like maybe a play on the words Jumping Man. He's a talisman. Mm-hmm. It's also like a place or switching of possessions or bodies.
Yeah, it's the Jumping Man is a very interesting image throughout that's been going on for a long time in the series, and I've never been very clear what he's saying with it. But we even have more on that. The spotted wallpaper in the scene is the same in that painting that hung in Laura Palmer's bedroom in Fire Walk With Me. The painting was given to her by another Black Lodge entity, Mrs. Tremond, who always we see with her grandson, who is a magician. like a little magical kid, who also appears at one point wearing the Jumping Man mask and is regularly seen jumping around.
It's like the trickster or shapeshifter.
Laura, of course, in Fire Walk With Me, had a vision that brought her into the painting. She found herself in the red room where she originally received the owl ring. So that asks the question, is there a direct passage from the Palmer house to the convenience store? And would that certainly seem to indicate why Sarah Palmer has all these demons haunting her?
Yeah.
Like, there's a direct conduit from one to the other.
Under that fan or that hallway or...
But yeah, Mrs. Tremond is one of those characters I had forgotten about entirely until this episode and reading other people's notes about it. Like, wait a minute, who is Mrs. Tremond?
Yeah.
And it's one of those actresses you've seen in a bunch of stuff.
She lived in the trailer.
Is it Fat Trout Church?
Yeah, she lived in Fat... Well, that was one of the places she lived.
She shows up in the series. She shows up first in the second season when Donna goes to visit her when she's doing Meals on Wheels.
First appearance is actually in The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer.
Really?
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
And then she's in episode 9.
Well, and then she shows up in Fire Walk With Me.
Which is referencing that scene.
And then they mention that her, you know, when Desmond is investigating the Fat Trout Trailer Park, they mention how, there's an old woman and her grandson named Chalfont who live in this trailer.
But they moved the same people who before was the same.
Were also named Chalfont.
They had the same name.
Yeah. And then where the trailer is gone, the owl ring is lying on the ground. And then you see her during... You see her during the David Bowie scene than in the convenience store.
This is going to take us 25 years to figure out.
There's so much even more about her, and I just don't even know how much, if at all, it ties in. We do know she's connected to Bob the Arm, the Woodsman, the Electrician, and the Jumping Man, because we actually saw them all and her grandson in a room together.
Mother again.
Just, man, there's just, and maybe none of this means anything, but there's such a direct link that you're like, how can that not mean anything? Anyway, so like I said, if the pathways are there, so maybe it can go other places too, because when he pulls the lever, Mr. C follows through a corridor that ends up superimposed with trees from the Ghostwood Forest, which seems to say, oh, if you take a right turn here, you'll end up there. and he's led up the stairwell that we saw when Cole looked into the vortex, that same stairwell the woodsmen were standing on. But then the door strangely opens up into the outdoor courtyard of a highway motel. He's taken to room 8, and the backwards-talking night manager opened the door for him, which some people theorize that's Lois Duffy stuck in that world. That seems to me like you don't really have any evidence for that. But
because we have no clue what she looks. I would love to have seen that Blue Rose scene instead of hearing the description by Albert. Nothing against that. I really wish we could have seen that in a flash visual.
Oh, yeah.
That scene would have been awesome.
Now, once again, Jeffries, of course, does not really want to talk about Judy, just like he said in no uncertain terms he didn't want to in Fire Walk With Me. Jeffries says, oh, you already met her, and puffed out some numbers out of his little teapot stem.
I love that he goes, I'm going to write this down for you. And then Mr. C pulls out the pen and paper, and then the numbers just like puff out of the side of them.
And the numbers are the first part of the coordinates that Diane got. So, so who is Judy? So a theory is that it's a code name for Laura Palmer. A theory says, my favorite theory, although I have no idea how it would work, is that Judy like Judy Garland, yeah. like Major Garland Briggs, sure. that there's a connection between Judy and Garland Briggs. I was like, someone's like, well, no, but they've said Judy's definitely like a woman. And I was like, well, maybe he's got a tulpa that's a female version, or maybe he had a secret life in drag. You don't know.
Interesting.
We've already had a character here. It was like
for Judy's yeah.
Or but most people seem to think that based on, like I said, Wrapped in Plastic, Firewalk with Me co-writer Robert Ingalls and Lynch had originally envisioned her as the sister of Josie Packard, in which okay. case Nato, who appears to be Asian mm-hmm. herself, yeah. is it seems to be a likely suspect yeah. to be Judy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we're honestly at this point, we're kind of grasping at straws, but Nato seems like the most likely
True.
One. But what's weird is Jeffrey's telling Mr. C he had met her before. And there's also some confusion Jeffrey shows with like Mr. C, who Mr. C actually is. And there was a lot of speculation. Maybe he can't tell the difference between Mr. C, Cooper in the Lodge, mm-hmm. Dougie, that somehow they're all kind to in Jeffrey's were way of seeing
but
things.
They're
all still the same
though, because
person.
They're all, they know he's gone. They know Cooper's gone. They mm-hmm. know. And the voice that was on when the first, it was episode 3 or 2 where Cooper calls Jeffries, and then it's like, it's not Jeffries, and it's like, who's he talking to? And
I don't know.
I don't really know.
Like I said, there's a lot
is
of guesswork, but.
Prison call? No.
No.
When he's in the hotel room.
He's in the hotel room, and he kills that girl, the one who's with Ray. And then
but
Dart.
I mean, if we were going to say okay. that. If we were to say it was Nato, I would think that Jeffries was confused and thought, oh, this is when Agent Cooper met her in the purple room. But
yeah,
if that's not the case, then you have to go back over in your head every other character we've seen Mr. C or has said he has encountered yeah. and gone, wow, maybe one of them was Judy. I don't know.
Damn.
Either way, he made the mistake of answering the phone and being teleported out of there. So after Jeffries is like, I'm done with you, meeting over, I'm going to dissipate.
Does anyone think that David Lynch might suffer from, is it called misophonia, where your sounds bother you because the on the windshield, the window sweeper guy, and he's like, making
oh yeah, that weird scene where he's
and
like,
and then
ah!
the phone's ringing and the lights flashing,
and just the whole idea that he can turn people up and down.
Yeah, because you know? I identify with this, and I'm like, he has to have it because I have it. Like, sounds are really intense for me, so I get freaked out, and I'm like, he has to
well,
have
sure,
this.
Well, sure, because
disorder.
His character has the hearing
aids. Yeah, that's what
yeah.
I'm saying. Yeah.
He could turn people down and off, but he's like, yeah. ah.
Myself, I wish yeah. I had synesthesia. Doesn't that sound awesome?
Right.
I have that, too.
That's so cool.
It goes with migraines.
Oh, well, that's
so
not
see,
as good.
I can see colors
yeah.
when I hear music.
I had to take a lot of acid to do that. So. And
oh,
I,
those were the days.
They were. They were long ago. They were literally so long ago, half the people listening to this weren't alive
you
when it happened.
You can try some sparkle. I hear you see penguins.
Dude, you don't think I haven't looked for some sparkle?
Yeah.
Oh, this brings us back to the My Little Pony.
We're gonna, yeah,
theory.
We're going to find Chris at a finale party in a couple weeks, all hopped up on drugs.
I found sparkle. Dressed up in a My Little Pony. Outfit.
Yeah. My foot is not real.
I'm a clopper. So right coming out, Mr. C, as if he hadn't had stressful enough of a day, Richard Horne shows up thinking he's Dale, who his mother knew, Audrey, presumably. Dale, of course, Mr. C immediately kicks his ass and then goes, all right, come on, get in the truck. We got to talk on the way, which is like,
that's funny.
I mean, we knew eventually these two were going to get teamed up together.
Yeah.
There seemed very little doubt about that. I mean, well, another two characters, they just kind of like, which is a weird way to write them off because it kind of is like, so that's it? You literally introduced these guys this season, gave them all very little to do, and then you're like, well, that's it for their story. Steven and Gersten in the forest, he's
yeah.
presumably withdrawing from drugs, or maybe he took too much. And talking about suicide, we see Mark Frost playing Cyril Pons, a TV news reporter.
Okay.
She freaks out and hides, and we hear a gunshot that at first you're like, oh, maybe he shot that guy. But then we see Cyril afterwards telling what he saw to Carl. So the only thing you presume is that he, in fact, did kill himself.
Yeah.
Weird.
But we have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
He thought he shot Becky by accident, or she committed suicide and he thought he did it because he was hopped
well,
up
on he said
sparkle.
It was something she did. He kept saying that it's something she did, and we're not really sure what that means or even the context.
Remember when they were in that huge fight before the coffee cup went flying through? He said, why did you do this? And we didn't know what Becky did.
We
thought
still don't
maybe
know.
She was the pretty blondes that the Roadhouse guy, Jack, I'm getting names completely.
Jacques' twin brother?
Thank you. Yeah, it set up some kind of weird rendezvous, you know, back to
during the 7 minute sweeping scene when he's on.
Oh, right,
yeah,
right.
Back when things were calmer, he was talking about hooking up the young cheerleader types with the guys, and he wanted his money
back.
So
the idea is if Becky was involved in that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because it was mentioned.
Because why else would that be there if not?
And then she was trying to get money for their drug habit, so it seemed like maybe she went off and did that, and he was freaking out about it. Like,
apparently that actor is very ill who played Jacques.
Yes.
You know, from what I hear.
Yeah.
He's extremely ill. Very sad.
I think as far as what you were talking about what like point does this scene serve, I think... And again, I could be completely wrong, but I think it all has to do with this whole kind of like drug through line, the sparkle through line we've been seeing through the season where, you know, way back at the beginning of the season, they mentioned, a kid OD'd and, you know, Bobby can't find the trail that they're using to get this stuff in. It's what Richard Horne took before he went and ran over the kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's presumably what the one lady who was like scratching her armpit was on, the kid that threw up in the car.
Yeah.
Like you're kind of seeing, you know, what I think is more and more, you know, this drug kind of infesting the town, you know, and you're seeing sort of the repercussions of that.
Begs the question why we're not seeing a lot more Balthazar Getty in the show, who apparently is the dealer of sparkle, the head guy for spreading sparkle.
I suspect if Richard Horne is going back to Twin Peaks, that there's going to be some sort of run-in with Red at the end of all this.
Which also, like, somebody posed the question, I'll skip real down to our fan questions real quick. Rob Moon says, is the guy who did magic tricks earlier on the kid with the old lady from original series?
Yeah.
And you're lucky I knew what you were talking about, because a lot of people wouldn't. That's a very obscure referencing. Yes, like I said, the Mrs. Tremont and her grandson, who would regularly do magic tricks, and then, of course, Red, we saw do a magic trick, and I get making the connection. As you can tell already, the answer is who knows?
Yeah.
Wasn't that child David Lynch's child? It's not Riley, though.
Yeah, it's David Lynch's kid.
Was it Riley?
No,
the
no.
The age doesn't seem right, because he's...
No, it was one of his kids in the show, and then in Fire Walk with Me, it was a nephew of his.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because he does look like a tiny.
He's got an extended family, man. Thanksgiving must be crazy.
Like, just eating those chickens from Eraserhead.
With the same hairdo.
And then we see James show up in the roadhouse with Freddie, who's showing there to tell the woman in front of her husband that he's like basically interested in her, Renee. We already knew there was kind of a little crush going on there.
Is Renee the same actress in Lost Highway who's the blonde wife of the director and she's hooking up with the pool man?
I don't think so.
The scream sounds the same.
Hmm. Could be.
I didn't recognize her face, but when she started screaming, I said, oh, it sounds like his wife.
Mm-hmm.
It was Mulholland Drive. And she was sleeping with the pool man.
It might be.
It sounded like the same scream, because I was like...
Or maybe he's got his own version of the Wilhelm scream.
This is true, During this whole scene where he's, just like sitting there, like staring at her, I kept thinking of that line from early on in season one, that James is sweet, but he's so dumb.
Yeah.
It's like, this is literally that, like, personified.
But, you know, he may be dumb, but he's got, like, the coolest friend in the world. To, like, protect him.
Right.
The guy's husband's like, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And Freddy, of course, who is basically a superhero with his green garden glove and super strength, knocks those guys into hospitalization with one short, swift punch.
And he even...
I thought we were going to see ZZ Top.
Right?
I was kind of bummed, like, why didn't they want to do it? But it was so great. The punch and then pauses and the song picks up. Like, the jukebox stops.
All this feels like this is starting to tie together, though, because some of the speculation I've seen, okay, so James and Freddy are now in the prison, right next to Nato. And if Nato is Judy and Mr. C is coming for Judy, then his destiny would be the one guy who's powerful enough to actually fight off Mr. C, who is himself of extremely enhanced strength.
And also you've got,
we saw in the arm wrestling
scene. And you've got Chad there, and that ties into the whole drug subplot. And you've also got Richard Horne coming back with him. So it's like...
Up to deal with Freddy's Rubber Fist of Justice.
Now that's a spinoff show I want to see. Him and Hawk teaming up, taking down crime.
Meanwhile, Chantel and Hutch are doing their job. Chantel shows up and kills Duncan Todd. And then his assistant, who doesn't go down quite as easily,
but
he gurgles a bit.
She wants to go to Wendy's.
I love how she goes, shoots him in the head, and like I freeze framed it. His head fucking explodes.
It was the other guy.
Oh, my God.
But there's some fun quotes. They're definitely, like, feel like they're imported from a Tarantino film all throughout this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Since so-called Christian nation, thou shall not kill, might as well be thou shall kill, show no mercy, forgive no one, fuck them in the ass. Nation of killers, it's gone on all along, killed all the Indians. And then a little later, Chantal, after this strangely like, I mean, you have a point, goes, yeah, but my fun is over when I actually kill someone. It's no fun torturing a corpse. I haven't got to torture anybody for a fucking long time, Hutch. Points out the star Mars, the planet Mars, which was oddly specific. I guess you're like, okay, so you're identifying with the god of war here.
Yeah.
And, and then says, one down, one to go, presumably that being Dougie.
Yeah.
Who I assume will not, in fact, go easily.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dougie, of course, eating happily chocolate cake provided by Janie E., the TV he turns on, messing with what, by the way, is a old school PlayStation 3 remote. I know, 'cause I have one. I don't know why they choose that, but I guess it would work. And the scene is from the movie Sunset Boulevard, which, by the way, is a fantastic movie, and everybody should fucking watch it. But the scene involves the Norma Desmond, I believe is her name, meeting with Cecil B. DeMille about her script. She's an actress, and ends up with her summoning a Paramount exec with the name Gordon Cole. So if you guys were confused about what was going on, that was the reasoning why Dougie was suddenly fascinated, because of the name Gordon Cole.
Yeah.
So because he's so transfixed, he's like, well, I guess I got to put a fork in the wall socket then.
Like, and I love, go home or
and
something.
I love this. But no, because this is the one thing that's going to make Cooper is he was such a Boy Scout, such a do-gooder, right person. Yeah. I'm going to do the one thing you just shouldn't do, put a fork in an electrical socket. Hooray! Like, I am convinced next week he'll be back.
Oh, yeah. He'll probably be fine. His hair will be, like, comically all... like,
that's amazing.
Do you think it has to... Like, memory of coming out of the electric socket, he's trying to...
I think it's
a memory to go back.
Or maybe he'll come back. Maybe next week he'll be Dale Cooper because of the electric shock.
Well, that's the thing is, I think, you know, there have been these little words, agent case files, where he kind of perks up. And then somebody's saying something as direct as Gordon Cole. And he has that look on his face like, holy shit. He's like, wait a minute. Like, he's not actually aware, but you can sense that he's like real Cooper's like almost in control, you know, where he's like, wait a minute. The last time I was me, I went through an electrical socket.
Yeah.
There's one right there. Yeah, let's see. Let's do this.
Of that and how to travel through.
Yeah.
It almost feels like Dale Cooper is in Mr. C and in Dougie. It's like kind of the soul is like. In pieces.
Or Dale Cooper's in Dougie the same way that Bob is in Mr. C.
Yes. Yeah. Like intermingling. And then there was a...
there's a little Dale Cooper in all of us.
Yeah.
there's a person on my Facebook. I think his name is Todd. Yeah, Todd Sellings. His theory is that Mr. Cooper, Mr. C that we're seeing, has always been the one that we have watched on Twin Peaks. And a good Dale... has always been in the lodge, and we've never really ever met him. Like
that Dale Cooper was just Mr. C pretending to be good.
Like real good psychopath. I'm thinking,
Having a hard time buying that.
I would have that. No,
it seems weird to me, but it's like if you did pull that off, that's excellent.
That's like some Shyamalan village shit. I don't know.
That would undermine the entire show. I think that would.
I'm thinking more that. The time travel is causing, you know, the sequence, because he thinks it's out of the mention that Annie said the good Dale's in the lodge. But I didn't see it as we've never met the Dale Cooper. So I don't know.
I think it was more time jumping.
I feel it's time travel and time jumping, yes.
So now we see, of course, the moment that really did make me cry this episode. Sorry, I didn't cry with Ed and Norma. I was like, that's sweet, but whatever. Let's move on.
You have no soul.
But the death of the character Margaret Lanterman, the log lady, played by Catherine Coulson, who, of course, died very shortly after finishing filming her scenes here. In fact, this was given they had already done an episode in memory of Catherine Coulson, and this episode said in memory of Margaret Lanterman, her character name, which was great. Yeah. Some of the memorable things she said in this final scene when she tells Hawk, like she's dying, she says, my log is gold, the wind is moaning, I'm dying. And she told Hawk to remember someone from our talks when we were able to speak face to face. Watch for that one, the one I told you about, the one under the moon at Blue Pine Mountain. And the question is that the symbol for the horned owl-like symbol on Hawk's map and the script left by Briggs for Bobby, where Hawk said no man should ever want to know what it represented? But clearly, whatever that thing is becoming the sort of like...
That's the end game.
The nexus.
Yeah.
The end game. But honestly, that there's another situation where, despite how much we've been given about that, it's still nothing but pure speculation where that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope it's actually the office of the X-Files in the basement of the FBI.
That would be an ending.
Well, it doesn't end. It only just begins.
We see, of course, Audrey and Charlie. As we talked about, Charlie's like, I've got my coat on. Are we leaving or what? And she's and so instead she strangles him.
Yeah.
As you do. And she says, interestingly, I never really saw you before the way I'm seeing you now. I'm meeting a different person. Who are you, Charlie? Which feels very much like a reflection of when Charlie was like, oh, I can end your story in an earlier episode. Yeah. That, like, she's stuck in something that's not really real.
Yeah.
It just doesn't... It definitely feels like Audrey, there's something wrong with her. Because if 25 years time progression without the bank explosion and a possible coma, I'm not quite sure I'd see her acting like this. So it does feel like she's mentally...
Well, I mean, she's stuck.
In some way.
It feels like there's something so absurdly unreal about it all. I feel like it's like, you know, it's like when you do see representations of people in purgatory or hell in modern fiction, where they're always incapable of realizing that they are in hell or purgatory, that they're the way they're stuck there because they're incapable of leaving on their based on their own actions.
Until Audrey goes into the back and puts her hand on the coffin, and then suddenly it all comes rushing back to her. And then they go back out to the church and walk into the light. God, end of the show, right there.
Don't.
that ending was like, what? Oh.
Or she wakes up and she's got no arms and legs and she's in a box.
Oh my God. No, 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 in the basement.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I would be pissed, but I would laugh for like an hour straight before the anger would set in if that's actually the case.
The Boston Helena thing? Because that bank explosion, this is possible.
No, I know, right?
Arms and legs and still be alive. And feel trapped. But
he's had so many references to other stuff his family has done or that he's done that it would be... I wouldn't put it past him to say, like, yeah, she doesn't have any arms or legs. And she's
he makes Boxing Helena canon to the Twin Peaks universe. Honestly, I can't even be mad at that point. I'm just like, all right, yeah, you're a troll, but come on, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pro-level troll.
I think he's at that... But
no
matter how it ends, someone's going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Someone's not going to like, because there's so many people's plots and stories that have to end or not end.
If we have Julian Sands showing up saying, Helena, please. No way.
Well, it's like, or
Bill Paxton's in the corner, like, playing with his little best shirt on.
That would be crazy.
Somewhere David Lynch is listening to this being like, damn it, they figured it out.
I'm done with getting in discussions with people about this because it's like, okay, obviously you don't feel that way, but I watched the show because it's David Lynch.
I didn't
watch it thinking it was going to feel exactly like the original show or that it would pick up with all those characters just how they were.
Done with that argument,
It's just ridiculous. Like, okay, well then why are you still watching it and screaming every week about stuff when
that's
you know this is
they
its
must
own
like it
thing?
In some way.
I'm loving the show because it's great David Lynch.
Yeah. Well, I also say, like, people who say that, like, it's like the 60s. You're talking about, like, you don't even mean the entire show. You mean the first season and that's it.
Yeah.
You don't mean the second season at all. You didn't watch the second season.
Or Fire Walk With Me.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Watch.
So it's like, what are you complaining about now? You should have known what you were getting into. I don't know. Anyway, once again, should have known what we got into, because once again, it ends at the Roadhouse.
Shocker.
With a band playing and another character we haven't seen before, Ruby.
Says, Charlene Yee just screaming across the floor.
Yeah. She's like, oh, I'm waiting for someone, and two bruisers pick her up and lift her out of the booth. She crawls across the floor and starts screaming. And this seems unlikely, but a bunch of people have linked it to the scene earlier in the episode where Cooper crawls across the floor and said,
"That was weird."
And I don't know how they worked out the timing, if it was really exact or they just synced it to exactly the right point, if the timing was exactly matched by the length of the shots.
Hmm.
But they have it set up where the moment he puts the fork in the socket, is when she starts screming as the matchup.
Yeah.
But once again, you can sync up anything to look like you want to.
She could be another person that's a vessel. Like,
I also took Dark Side. I synced up Dark Side of the Moon, and it synced up perfectly.
God.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, if you actually sync up Dark Side of the Moon with the wall, it actually answers all the questions.
My God.
Yeah, all the questions. It just says 42.
It's just- And your fucking face melts off.
Yeah. So we did actually have real fan questions this week. Jabril Mahmoud, I'm so sorry if I saying your wrong name wrong, I apologize, said, have you guys discussed Mark Frost as a contributor to the return? In the episodes I've heard from, he hasn't been mentioned very often. In my opinion, he's essential to the final work as Lynch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we, you know, just by the nature of what you were talking about, you know, wanting it to be like a David Lynch experience, you're going to talk about Lynch a little more than Mark Frost. But yeah, I definitely feel like you can feel his touch, especially on like the last two episodes when there's actually more conventional plot. That's where you can kind of feel that's Mark Frost, you know, that's his hand in the writing.
But even so, there's so much of like, well, we're almost by just default, we're saying Lynch because it is so very Lynchian in feel, but like, who knows what stuff Frost actually wrote and what Lynch actually wrote.
The Secret History of Twin Peaks is written by Mark Frost. And so much of that informs this. Like, we'll have to,
oh, definitely.
Yeah. And like, so like much of it.
That is the thing is yeah.
Didn't he have nothing to do with Firewalk with Me, though?
Well, yeah. He you know, obviously, you know, the original show involved in all that. You know, and Lynch publicly has many times said, he's like, yeah, everybody gives me all the credit, but he's like, this show, it's at least 50% Mark Frost, if not more.
Because he's good and, with all the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, well, basically. Yeah, because essentially how that relationship worked in the beginning was, you know, Lynch was doing his weird esoteric thing, and Frost was the one who was able to, like, channel that.
Yeah.
And know how to, like, how to actually run a TV show and structure that.
Yes, yeah. No, and, that's what I picked up.
Yeah, and Mark Frost didn't have anything to do with Fire Walk With Me, because when they were getting ready to make Fire Walk With Me, both Frost and Lynch wanted to make a movie, but Lynch was very set on doing the weird sequel prequel movie first and then getting to like a proper sequel later.
Mm-hmm.
And Frost was like, nah, man, that's a terrible idea. So, so Frost didn't have anything to do with Fire Walk With Me, but, Secret History of Twin Peaks, that book was all Frost. And yeah, that thing, the farther along we get into the season, the more it's like, you realize how much of that book, you know, like directly ties into what's going on now.
And the upcoming Twin Peaks, the final dossier, which comes out as soon as the show is over.
Yeah. So, and again, I feel like it's one of those things with this season, once it's all over, you know, and kind of the curtain is lifted back a little bit more, we'll have a better idea of percentage-wise what was Mark Frost and what was David Lynch. But yeah, I do definitely feel like you can still feel Mark Frost's touch on this.
I would like to throw out, just having read these, and they're so much fun. He's written a bunch of stuff, but he has a book, The List of Seven and The Six Messiahs. So much fun. The Six Messiahs is the sequel to it. Just really recommended as sort of like a rip-roaring adventure, occult murder mystery type thing. But with like a bunch of fictional characters coming involved in it, and a lot of references to like theosophy and conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So much fun. And I think most people who really like the plotting side of Twin Peaks would really enjoy those books. So I recommend. They've been out for so long, you can usually find them at used bookstores. So
And honestly, just like the way that the plot of this whole season has been structured, where as we've gone along, we've realized this is all like been one giant spider's web. That's all everything is connected. That's why. That's why I feel like that. You know, more of the, as far as the plot, more of the structure of this entire season, I think more of that might have to be on Mark Frost's shoulders, because a lot of the stuff he writes about you know, government, you know, cover-ups and conspiracies and all these very insane.
The Blue Rose feels like all
plots within plots. I wouldn't be shocked if we find out that a lot of the structure of this season, in the just the enormity of it, came from him.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. They're obviously great collaborators together, and I hope that if they don't choose to do more Twin Peaks next, which, come on, guys, do more Twin Peaks. But if they don't, they choose to work together again on something else for another show for Showtime. I would love to see another TV show from the two of these guys.
I do think that the directors often get more attention because it's visual.
Yeah.
And then writers, sometimes they're doing all this work and they get kind of ignored.
That's pretty par for the course.
It's like the singer will get the attention of the songwriter. It's a footnote. It's not really fair.
And Lynch, unfortunately, you know, is the bigger name of the two of them. You know, he's the one who has more notoriety around him.
I don't know, man. Mark Frost did Hill Street Blues.
He wrote Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
come on,
let's not talk about that. Right, so the last question.
That's Judy.
The last question is from one of your people, David Assassinino.
Oh, yeah. I love that name. I don't know. Yeah, it sounds
Assassino.
Dangerous.
Assassino. It does sound. It sounds like it's the Italian word for assassin.
Yeah.
who just asked sort of like a scream, a primal scream. Says, who is Red? Where did Bob go?
Yes.
Who was imitating Jeffries? Was it Albert? Where the fuck do you get that from? Is Albert a doppelganger? Is what? Becky dead? What? Is the drunk drooling blood or engine oil?
Yes.
Why are scenes of from TP out of sequence?
Time
or are
travel.
We seeing two timelines playing out differently at different times?
Possibly.
Is Chantal secretly Judy? Who is Judy? Are you Judy?
The answer,
I'm Judy.
The answer to all of this
I've
is
been
yes.
Judy
yes.
The whole time.
Correct.
Yes,
you are accurate. You are right.
The answer is blue.
You are factually true.
I think
and then your iPod just fades away.
Was it episode 3 they were talking about David Lynch is outside with Albert and it's a tight scene and
episode
it's going
4. Yeah.
Blue and he goes none the bluer. And I think we all thought, is Albert a double agent? He's acting kind of weird, or is Tammy?
Well, there was the whole bit in I think it was 5 or 6 when they go to interview Mr. C in prison, and then you find out that Albert had been feeding him information,
yes.
thinking that it was Dale.
Got
but there
it.
Is that moment where they do kind of cast a bit of a shadow of a doubt on Albert.
Wonder,
briefly,
yeah, is Albert a double agent
Which
or a shady
begs
character?
Begs the question that we must provide an answer for. How many Twin Peaks characters does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh, my God.
So somehow there must be an answer other than just fish.
Judy.
Which is the obvious answer.
The light bulb changes itself.
The light bulb has always been and never was. I don't know.
You're dreaming the light bulb.
Fell a light bulb.
I honestly, if you guys have some funny answers to that question, I would love to hear it. Because there's got to be an ultimate,
I'm
we're all
sure.
going to laugh out loud answer to that joke, and I want to hear what it is.
So I was looking at the release schedules for the next 2 episodes, and so we have 16 this upcoming week.
Yeah.
And they're airing 17 and 18 together.
What?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, no.
Oh, my
yep.
God.
I can't handle that much, like, reveal and
so we literally... that's the Sunday after next.
So yeah. We probably should have, we do have to do like a 3-episode, like,
so the next
episode.
Time, the next time we record,
it'll be the final.
It's going to be over.
Yeah.
So we're like,
oh, we should do like, oh, we should really do a live stream of watching it.
Oh my God.
We might be, but then talking over it, do you really want to do that?
No.
I feel like that would just be 2 hours of us going, oh!
Yeah. You can't say anything. You can only make weird sounds, like monkey chimps.
And hand
like
motions.
And then Chad going, this is a fucking nut house.
But yeah, this is going to be our last chance to like convene right before the end.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe like a little while after the final dossier comes out, we'll get back together for one last sort of final a little time has passed.
Yeah.
Yes. We've got the final book we've looked at. So here are some wrap-up thoughts about the whole thing.
We've watched all 18 episodes multiple times.
I do feel like this whole season, when it's over, is going to benefit a lot from rewatch.
From a rewatch, for sure.
And especially once the final dossier is out.
And once they release, hopefully, an impressive Blu-ray set of the season with lots of like extras and maybe even...
Have a Fire Walk With Me standalone movie called The Blue Rose.
Yeah.
Explain. I want to see that
more
happen.
Missing pieces.
I want to see the Blue Rose situation happen visually.
Yeah.
Not just explain. I want to see that.
I mean, normally I'm always like, I don't want to see a fucking prequel to the things I love.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I would totally watch a prequel about like a young Agent Cole and Agent Jeffries investigating
Blue Rose
cases.
What about the frog bug lady back in the 40s? We could just go all the way back. I mean, just start from 1947.
That they made that. It was called The Secret History of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Well, visually.
True.
I've read it. It's
I
great. Now I want to see it now on a big screen with popcorn.
Well, that is in fact it for our summation of these two huge, almost impossible to have a summation of Twin Peaks episodes. Once again, you guys, please let us know if you have any questions, if you disagree with us about some stuff and have some alternate theories about things. We want to hear about it all. Let us know in the comments, either on Facebook pages where this posts, or Twitter, or on the site itself, wherever you want. You can mail us a letter if you want, but you'll have to like you'll have to go to the Black Lodge to figure out what the address is. So
send Morse code.
Maybe it's the black mailbox in Arizona.
My God.
Oh,
let's see what I did there.
Here's the number.
Yeah,
he's pantomiming in a Harpo-like manner.
It's a smoke signal.
Did you write it down? We just showed it to you, folks. God.
Or just, I'll hum, and you can imagine the letters in your mind as I hum. I send a transmission.
Hum. Did you get that? Okay, good.
Yeah.